this is Kevin, and I'm with my brother Brandon.
Hello, Brandon.
And welcome to another episode of Sons of the Double Cheeseburger. How are you doing this this fine day, Brandon?
Well, whether it's a fine day or not, I'm doing all right. Okay. Yeah, pretty ordinary day coming past Easter, which was a non-event for the most part. And yeah, just settling into another week. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. Yeah, we... the most interesting thing that happened this week was my kids had gotten some school assignments, and they didn't have school on Friday and they didn't have school on Monday.
Okay.
So they had an assignment that was ostensibly due on Thursday and they hadn't completed it, but they were given some latitude to have it ready for the beginning of this week.
Okay.
So as we're talking about this on Monday night, as we're eating dinner, Eileen and I ask them, Eileen being my wife, so when do you have to have this done by? And they're telling us, well, you know, beginning of this week, month, Tuesday, whatever. I said, so
Tuesday, whatever.
So do you have it done? Well, no. I'm like, but it's Monday night now. And they're like, but it was the weekend. We had a long weekend. And I was like, how do you have any concept of having had a long weekend? We have been
on a long weekend. You know,
right. We have been sheltering in place now for almost a month. Or a month. We've been sheltering, you know, I'll say a month. And you still are falling back on this idea, well, it was the long holiday weekend, and so we didn't have time to work on it.
Well, there's also the fabulous, amusing thing that you do when you're a kid where you think to yourself, like, it's a holiday weekend. Oh, so then I can take a break from getting things done. Right?
Right.
Which later in life, you just come to realize, well, if I don't do this now, it's just going to be waiting for me. So I might as well get it done.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Maybe not everyone learns that. Some of us learn that eventually. Yeah. Yeah, well, I think the other big exciting thing that I'm sure was the case for a lot of families was getting four generations together on video chat for Easter. That was not everyone has the same level of video chat skills.
Right.
Yeah. Right. So that's, and everyone else has had their own experiences that way. But yeah, ours was entertaining, to be sure.
I think that's the best way to describe it. Yeah. I mean, I don't think we need to say anything to hurt anybody's feelings. I don't think it was a horrible experience. But I did it twice because we started out and we did it with my mother-in-law.
Yeah.
Jan. And with then mom and dad and grandma, yeah. Rap. Because she often celebrates the holidays with our family since she's otherwise alone. And she likes to see these people.
Uh-huh. Is she listening to the podcast? Jan, are you listening?
Are we waiting for her to answer?
I'm waiting for her to answer. Call in. Let us know, Jan. We'll wait for your call.
I think we'll let's keep moving in the meantime. Okay. All right. So what it was a lot of people, I noticed that these family members are very good about offering kind of verbal cues and notes to let you know that they're listening to what you're saying.
Uh-huh.
They're kind of interactive without necessarily interrupting. The trouble is then when you're using one of these online tools, when someone speaks, even if they're just saying, mm-hmm, or, oh, yes, Barbara, that sort of thing.
Yes.
Or, oh, yes, mother. It interrupts the whole conversation.
Yeah.
It's kind of, there's a learning curve there. And for me, I just sit and say nothing. So I do well with it. I'm not tending to interrupt people. But, you know, in person, that's a skill that works well.
Yeah.
Because people like getting feedback to what they're saying, right?
That's right.
Yeah. The reflective listening and such doesn't work as well on the
not quite as well. I find that the way to do that that's really, really pleasant is you sit there, you don't say anything at all, and then you wait until everyone has sort of petered out, and then you say, are you all done? Can I speak now? And that does, you know, that keeps the room settled and comfortable. Everyone's pretty happy with that.
Yeah.
Doesn't come across as angry and aggressive at all.
I was just clipping my nose hairs. Because it was actually a good view. I could then see myself on the screen. And
I was going to say, that was the other thing. We saw a lot of, like, the tops of people's heads.
Yes.
Saw a lot of people's ceilings or, like, the high part of their wall. I had to make sure, I had to look, you know, make sure that I didn't have, like, you know, dust collecting and, you know. Think through things, because we keep learning, right? I mean, these are things that I'm learning. New situations teach us things. Like, if we made some divisions, if we said, like, from the time that you became an adult, whenever you would self-identify that as, what is something that you learned about yourself or learned that you liked once you had become an adult and you were making your life decisions instead of your parents or, you know, and maybe even then let's take it farther. What's something you learned about yourself then after you became a spouse? What's something you learned about yourself after you became a parent? What do you think? Mm-hmm.
The first kind of point of division, I'm not quite prepared with an answer.
Okay.
That one. So nothing has come to mind more immediately. And I can try and come back to that. In regards to
Let me ask you this. What if I tell you my thing that I've learned since I became an adult? Because then maybe, I mean, I don't know. But anyway, the thing that I learned after becoming an adult that I liked was spicy food. Like, we grew up, again, we talk about things with our growing up. We grew up in a house, our mom's a really nice cook, but we didn't eat really, like, creatively seasoned stuff, right?
Yeah, we had kind of that bland Dutch palate.
Yeah, yeah. And again, I mean, good, mom's a great cook, and the stuff that she made within that is awesome and is still some of my favorite food. But at the same time, like, when I was going out with friends or, you know, making other choices, I can remember, like, the first time going to a Thai restaurant. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is, I didn't even know any of this was out here. I think Chinese was probably kind of adventurous for us, even for what were we, the way we grew up, wouldn't you say?
Yes, I don't think we had Chinese ever as a family thing.
I'm not sure we did.
Right, I did not have Chinese food until I was an adult and I purchased myself Chinese food.
Yeah.
I did not have ice cream until I was an adult. Do you recall this?
I do remember that. Yeah, you like did not like ice cream. So is that maybe something you learned that you liked eventually?
Far too well.
Okay,
yes.
All right.
And that was one of the things that has taught me that, because I had no reason to not like ice cream. I didn't have I don't like milk.
Right.
But I'll tell you, I know I don't like milk because I sat down one time, poured myself a glass of milk, took a big swig, and the milk was sour, and it made me vomit, and I don't drink milk now. You know, you hear those stories, people get drunk on tequila, and then they can't ever drink tequila again.
Yeah.
Mine is, I drank a big old gulp of sour milk, and I was done for. There are a number of things, and particularly related to food, that I have said historically, I do not like this. And almost universally, I have not tried those things.
Yeah.
So that's something that has continued to change, particularly now as I have kids and you want to model better choices.
Yeah.
That I've continued to be able to push through or push past, and I continue to identify things with I realize I've never tried that. Why not? I should try it now. Just like I've never had coffee, and now you are going to...
Sending you some coffee, yes, from my friend. In fact, I bought it yesterday. I bought you some steeped coffee from our friends at Cat and Cloud here in Santa Cruz. And by the way, Cat and Cloud are not sponsors of the podcast, but I love those guys. And so I don't mind telling you that if you want some really, really good coffee, go to Cat and Cloud. I think it's catandcloudcoffee.com. I'll double check while I'm thinking about it. But it is, great coffee. And what they have is they have a partnership with a company that's also local here that now makes steeped coffee. So what they do is they make it in individual size bags. They've got it all figured out in terms of the proper grind and everything, so that you can put a bag in a cup, pour hot water over it, steep it, and you get a good cup of coffee just like that. So I'm going to send you some of that because you're going to like that. Steeped coffee is also not a sponsor of the podcast, but we're totally open to it, Steeped, if you're interested.
We're not being sponsored by Concepts?
We're not. No, I mean, there's an actual company. They're called Steeped Coffee.
Oh, there is?
Coffee.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, then I'm sorry.
We're also not being sponsored by any Concepts this week. That's true.
That kind of makes me think, like, if there's a company called White Bread.
Yeah, right.
But, I mean, I see what you're saying. That's good. I apologize to the folks at Steeped Coffee.
Although, I got to tell you, Anchor asked me if I wanted to read an ad for the concept of ennui this week. And I said, no. No, I don't. Not this week. And so we had a chance to sponsor, you know, be the official podcast of ennui. But I chose not to.
You've told me a bit about this Cat and Cloud racket. And I am intrigued by their business practices. I think if we could be so lucky sometime is to talk with somebody from there about, not necessarily about coffee, but how they see approaching business, kind of what running a business means as responsible human beings.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that would be an awesome conversation sometime. Maybe I can get somebody from Cat and Cloud to come and sit in with us, or I can do a talk with them or something, because I could go on for a while right now, but yeah, suffice it to say in the moment that I love their coffee, but I also love the culture of the place, and that's why I'm a real regular there. Like, even now, in quarantine times, or in SIP. Remember, we're making it a thing.
Right.
Did you all do that? Did everyone promote SIP? I actually, oh my gosh, Kevin, I didn't tell you this. I read someplace in media this week where they used the term SIP.
Really?
Yes. I was like, it's happening. We're changing the zeitgeist.
I think that might be similar to, you know, how two people were inventing
the
telephone or the light bulb at the same time.
Totally different.
That sort of thing.
No.
Now, Martin tells me, Martin being my son who is not afraid of being stalked, that he had used the phrase sipping a couple weeks ago.
Nice.
And I had forgotten about that, but he indeed had. So I think he may have kind of dropped that idea into my head.
There you go.
After you said SIP.
Yeah.
I then went with sipping because he had perhaps already introduced that
there
to me.
Go. So, yeah. So at some point, we'll talk about Cat and Cloud in more detail because what they do is really, really exciting. It's very cool.
But it doesn't matter.
Yeah, go ahead.
You're the sort of person. I think I'm the sort of person. I know I'm the sort of person. I think you might be the sort of person that the nature of a business ends up influencing how you perceive their product.
Yeah. You know, this is largely because we're under the sway. I'm only halfway joking with what I'm about to say. We're under the sway of Lloyd Dobler. You know that, right?
Are you going to try and do that whole...
I'm not going to try to do it because I won't get it right.
I don't want to sell anything that's bought or sold or made, or I don't want to make anything that's sold or bought. Right.
Yeah. I think that there is something, there's an ethos there, and it's probably generational or something close to it that I do think we're the sort of folks who we need that whole cumulative experience to be all right with us and to feel right. So, by the way, when you're talking about foods that you say you don't like and usually you just haven't tried them.
Right.
How many foods, are there foods, because I can think of one for me, are there foods that you definitely can say, I've tried it, I don't like it, it's not happening anymore? Because mine is guacamole.
Really?
I've had guacamole twice now in my life.
Your sister-in-law makes fabulous guacamole, my wife. I don't know about Christy's sister.
Oh, Christy, yeah. But, Christy makes great guacamole. I'm told.
Yeah, so I mean, it's that's a food I had never tried before, and then Eileen makes it, and so I tried it, and I was like, oh. And I'm kind of mixed on guacamole, but that wasn't really your question.
I must have a guacamole problem, because I've had it twice. I had it in second grade. My second, which is going to seem crazy, right?
Where were you getting guacamole in second grade?
1977. Think about this. 1977, my second grade teacher, her name was Mrs. Griman. I still remember her. I don't remember all my teachers. I remember her. And she had us.
Oh, that was still in Des Plaines, wasn't it?
It was still in Des Plaines. Illinois. I'm having a hard time with that. Okay. But.
Wait.
So she was having us try all different kinds of foods from different cultures. She was Jewish, and so she had introduced us to potato pancakes, and so we were doing different things. And I remember that we had like this class potluck. We had guacamole. I had some of it. I went home, and I was violently sick. Violently sick. I remember just like green just spewing out of me. This is how I remembered it. And like, I was horrified so much. I was so traumatized by that I went decades just being like, no, you know, people would ask me, no guacamole. No, I have a problem there. And it wasn't until maybe 10 years ago now, Christy and I went out to dinner with Jose and Claudia Garcia, who were friends of ours. They were the pastor and of the Spanish language church that worshipped, used the same building that we used. And I were talking about this, and everyone at the table has given me a hard time about this. Said, oh, come on, you have to try guacamole again. So we're out with them, and I'm like, okay, you guys, I love you, I trust you, I trust Christy, everyone else, try the guacamole. Tell me the guacamole is good. And if you say it's good, then I will try it, because then I know I'm getting, maybe I got awful guacamole in 1977, right? You guys, if you can all sign off on this, then I'll have it. They all tried the guacamole at this restaurant we were at. They said, this is good guacamole. It have it. I had some. I got violently sick again.
So I was going to say that it seems just as likely that if you had some potluck sort of thing at school, that there was any number of germs incubating in any of the things you might have tried.
Possibly.
But you got violently sick again.
Yes.
So does that make you wonder, are you actually allergic to the avocado?
It makes me wonder. I don't know. So then I'm left with thinking, okay, twice I've had guacamole, twice it has forcefully left on its own recognizance. It is not right away either. I'm not saying like, because there's that, right? There's like, if you get yourself all psyched up. So I didn't get myself all psyched up. I had the guacamole. I ate it. I was like, okay, that's fine. We're doing this. The taste isn't exciting to me, but it's not bad. I get what you guys are, why you guys are saying this is pretty good. Maybe this will grow on me with time. And then I think it was before we even left the restaurant, bad things happened. So I was really giving it a fair shake, and it shook me. No more guacamole for me. I know for sure.
Well, yeah. No, I think that's understandable. I don't have anything that provides that sort of
trauma.
Demonstrative evidence that I should not be eating it or that I don't like it.
Right.
I was even trying to think of something. There isn't anything yet that I thought I really didn't like that I have found that I just can't stand.
There
are things I still have yet to try that I suspect I won't be able to stand.
Yeah.
But a lot of the other things I've maybe been, you know, indifferent. Like, well, it wasn't terrible, but I don't know that I need to add this now into my repertoire, you know?
Sure.
Like, we will eat Brussels sprouts and cauliflower regularly.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that stuff always seemed real skeevy to me before, but
I don't think we ever had those offered to us as children.
No, either. No, no, my gosh. I think the vegetables we had offered to us were peas, cooked carrots.
Wax beans, remember those?
Oh, those were so...
Lima beans. I believe Dad loves lima beans, doesn't he?
But Mom often, I don't remember her making us eat those. It was kind of like with split pea soup, that when she offered that, there was an alternative for us, which was one of the only times, or that we weren't ever, I don't remember being forced to eat my lima beans.
I remember they would be like in with mixed vegetables. And be like,
oh, right. Yeah, well, then sure. I mean, I just, like, you choke it down. Come on, man. It was always the lima bean with the peas and carrots.
Yeah, right.
Yep.
Great combo. Great. Wow.
Yeah, the yellow wax beans, I don't know.
What a garbage fire of a crew that is. See peas, carrots, and lima beans rolling up, and you're like, nope, party is closed.
I even tried, like, hard-boiled eggs.
Like, I haven't done that. I can't. The smell makes me nauseous. I can't even bear to try.
It wasn't bad. It tasted like an egg. I'm not prepared to enjoy the devil's eggs yet, which is another thing my mother makes. My wife. Oh boy, somebody's gonna have a field day with that.
Is it your therapist? Anyway.
I'll have to let him know.
I don't like the taste of, it's funny you say that. Like, I don't like the taste of fried eggs. I don't like egg whites.
I've not tried fried eggs. I've not tried eggs over easy. I still just have eggs scrambled or omeletted or frittated.
Yeah.
And I haven't tried liver. I have a friend who has encouraged me to try liver.
Okay.
And he's, you know, he says you griddle it up there a little bit, or, you know, you fry it up in a pan, and he said it tastes good. And I'm like, why am I eating an organ that filters out bad things? I don't understand what the point of that is. You know, this is an idea I have. There's parts of the animal where I think, why am I eating this part? Why would I want to eat this part of the animal?
Right.
Like, what am I getting out of the brain? Why do I have to eat the brain? No.
I don't know.
I don't think that there's anything there that's going to be better than the other parts that I've already enjoyed. I don't know. And it's probably a small-minded view to take.
Who was I listening to? I don't remember. I don't remember the source at all, so I can't. But this is not original to me in any way. I do know who it was. It's the guy who's the CEO of Impossible Foods. And I was listening to an interview with him, and he was talking about how the meats that we eat are, particularly in the Western world, virtually all the meats that we eat because they were animals that thousands of years ago were easy to catch and domesticate.
Makes sense.
And so...
I don't know how chickens fall into that, because you ever tried to catch a chicken?
Just like put up a fence, right?
Perhaps it gets past the fence. Have you ever tried to then catch it?
I have not.
There's chickens at our kids' school, and the school that Eileen works at, and that I occasionally substitute at and whatnot. They have chickens, and when school is closed, like during breaks or whatnot, they take volunteers to tend to the chickens. And they're filthy animals, but... If you're not quite paying enough attention the first time you ever do this, and you let a chicken get out, you find they're pretty slippery little guys, gals. And then when you catch it, I felt like, I felt like, is it Lenny from, what's the Steinbeck novel?
Oh, Of Mice and Men.
Of Mice and Men, right. When he crushes the puppy, I think.
Yeah.
Right. I grab the chicken, and I'm thinking chicken must have something substantial to it. I've eaten chicken breasts and legs. They all seem pretty substantial, right?
Yeah.
I grab the chicken to pick it up, and inadvertently, I squeeze it so hard that my fingers touch. And I'm like, oh, my God, I'm going to crush this chicken with my hands. So that was, yeah.
I thought for a minute you were going to say you felt like Lenny from Laverne and Shirley. And I was trying to remember an episode of Laverne and Shirley that had a chicken in it. I couldn't remember one. They were Milwaukee, so I think it's mostly like bratwurst. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, so this guy's point was like most of the foods that we eat the stuff that was easiest to catch and domesticate, and then we eat the parts of those that, for the most part, are largest and easiest to butcher and give the most production, and which makes a lot of sense. You know, and he said, so there's lots of meats out there, and there's like flavor palettes that people try more exotic meats because, you know, if they have the opportunity, and they often taste very different. And in some cases, you go, oh, that's bad because you're used to the taste of, you know, chicken, beef, and pork. In some cases, you say, oh, that's really interesting. That's really good. So, how about after you got married? What's something that as a spouse, while you were a spouse before you became a dad, what's something that you learned that you like or something you learned about yourself?
I learned that I have to make a conscious effort to work together with somebody.
Okay.
I found that it's very easy for me to be set in my ways of doing something. And I learned that a pattern I have is I will come up with an idea of something I want to do or something that needs doing, and I want to then do it right away. And that schedule does not always work with another person. And I find that I get very impatient and I just don't have a lot of tolerance then for not, okay, I want to go do this and I can't go do it right away. I'm waiting on you people. What's going on? So it's, I learned that I don't know if that's me being self-centered or what, but I had to learn to check myself and to kind of adjust my internal clock on these things, on having an idea.
Sure.
And on then, you know, the fulfillment of that idea.
There you go. I think I learned that I like traveling more than I thought I did.
Yeah, you know, you always didn't, you were often dismissive of traveling.
I was, yeah. And I realized a lot of it is that here's what I've come to realize. So this is the thing. I've learned that I enjoy what happens when I travel, and I still really hate all of the preparation for travel, and I'm not even that big a fan of the, like, being on the destination, like, on the journey, you know what I mean?
Hmm.
So I've learned the thing I like is encountering new destinations.
Yes.
But I don't enjoy the mechanics of travel, and I don't enjoy the preparation for travel. That's still true.
Well, I mean, that's not necessarily a character flaw. I think a lot of people, that's their least favorite part of traveling. So you're in good company there. I love to travel, and I would travel all the time, and I would never come home.
There you go.
But that's ties into something that I learned about myself upon having kids. Mm-hmm. It's that I learned that I like kids.
There you go.
I don't know that I really thought that I liked kids. I didn't dislike kids. I didn't have a lot of experience with kids as a younger adult,
mm-hmm.
or even, you know, growing up. You know, I've known lots of people who had larger families, and so they either had, you know, younger siblings, or they had cousins, or whoever, and they had a lot of experience with kids, younger kids than themselves. So they had some familiarity with that kind of relationship. We didn't have that. And while I wasn't, you know, against kids, kids didn't bother me. I didn't have enough information to know, how am I really going to like having kids around all the time? Or am I going to like interacting with them? And it started to build from the time when we learned we were expecting up to the point then when my kids were born, I was all kids all the time. I love kids. I love interacting with kids. I like talking to kids. I like making kids laugh. I like listening to kids. I like helping them to think about things. I like doing anything with kids. Kids are fun to spend time with, I learned. That's my feeling on kids. And so I just like having kids around.
All right. Yeah. Now, I don't mean to dig too deep into the past here. But I one of the things I think about very much when we were young, one of the things that I can really vividly recollect about you is that you would get really anxious about other kids. Like if kids were coming to our house, you would get anxious about those other kids messing with your stuff. Do you remember that?
I do. That's
So how do you feel about that now? Are you okay with kids messing with your stuff?
I don't have the same kind of problem with it. I've not been able to figure out what that was about as a kid. It's an embarrassing, you know, it's one of those, it's retroactively embarrassing to me to think of having, you know, kind of had that sort of mindset. It's not something I'm particularly proud of or anything like that, but
well, again, I'm not, but you
know,
we all
I don't know what it was about. What do you think it was about? What do you think that was about with me?
I don't know. I mean, I don't, and I wouldn't even like guess a lot. I mean, there was a possessiveness to it, right? But we can be possessive for all kinds of reasons. You know, we can be territorial or, you know, or insecure about something or, you know, not trusting. But I don't know. I wouldn't even want to venture a guess as to why, you know, why that was. It was this concern, and maybe you had a bad experience that I don't remember that, and the rest of us maybe didn't remember, where like some kid came over and broke something or stole something or messed with something. You know what I mean? Because I think it was just that sense that like, and I don't remember if it was mostly younger kids or if it was even like peer-aged kids.
I think it was even peer-aged kids. I do remember a couple of instances. There was when we were younger, before we moved into the house where we really grew up, I have a vivid memory of an older kid than me at the time, and I would have been four or five, taking my bicycle from me and just riding off with it.
I kind of remember that.
And then going and telling Dad, and Dad's in his cowboy boots, and he's running down the alley chasing after the kid. And I don't even remember if we got the bike back or not. I remember thinking, is my dad going to fall down? Because those cowboy boots seemed a little slippery there on the pavement. And then there was other time, there was a neighbor two doors down who took some stuff from us. But I think I already had that issue by that point.
Yeah.
So I don't know that either of these explain it.
Right.
I think it was something more than just being selfish. Mm-hmm. And I don't say that because I want to protect myself. I think there was an insecurity and a sense of trying to control and maintain my environment because that was comforting to me. The uncertainty of something leaving my environment or that I did not have control over caused me anxiety.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, again, everyone's, you know, we've all got different things that, that, you know, ways that we respond to stuff that other people are like, well, why, what's the big deal? So that was just the one that I remember from you, but that's cool. That's cool that now, you have found you really enjoy the company of children. Nice. The thing that I can think of, and this doesn't actually have anything to do with me being a parent, because this is not like something that I share with my kids, particularly, but something that I learned that I like since the time I became a parent, which is like the last, well, now that's like almost 20 years, is graphic novels. Like we didn't read comics growing up. I didn't read comics. I mean, like in the newspaper, but I didn't read comic books. I didn't read graphic novels when I was a kid or when I was a younger adult. And I found that I really, really like, I don't think that I like everything, but, some of the stuff that's really, put together in ways that are interesting and creative. And, I really enjoy some of that stuff.
Yeah, I like graphic novels too. I think as much as I really enjoy a good meaty read,
mm-hmm.
There are definitely stories where the graphic novel just kind of gets a nice pace. And even I've read graphic novel adaptations of books that I enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a different way to interact with the story.
Sure.
Kind of gives you, oftentimes I like to, what I like about reading is the images that I'm able to develop in my head,
uh-huh.
for something. I don't like watching a movie or a TV show about a book or something before reading it, because I don't want that to influence my way of interpreting it.
Yeah.
But with the, you know, in it's fun to see a different, somebody else's, you know, a different perspective that someone else puts on it.
Yeah.
And a graphic novel is easy to just chew up, to get through. And I like that sometimes. Mm-hmm. That it's, I don't know if that's one of the things that you like about it, but I can tear right through a graphic novel. And sometimes it's nice just to go from beginning to end with a story in much quicker fashion. It just feels a little.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of. Better. Although, like, some of the ones that I like, I will spend a lot of time on them, because, again, a lot of times it's a lot of the imagery that's really striking, and I'll spend time with it, you know, and dig back into some of that stuff. And this is probably anathema to people who are really deep into this stuff, but I actually find too, with some of the stuff, I really like reading graphic novels on like e-readers, because they've got devices within them where it'll take like a page and you can look at the whole page, and then you can look at each panel or each segment of it blown up to like full page size.
Right. Okay.
So you can really dig into some of that detail. Alan Moore's Saga of the Swamp Thing is one, like, for example, that I just loved reading it as an ebook, because there's so much going on like visually within all of that. So,
yeah, and I'd imagine there are some graphic novels that lend themselves more to that kind of deeper interpreter. I'm not thinking of the right words. But offer more opportunity.
Like a deeper appreciation. Like really, yeah, like really spending more, investing more into it and getting, yeah, I get what you're saying.
Like something like Mouse by Art Spiegelman.
Yeah, right.
That's got a little bit more heft to it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not necessarily the sort of thing that you churn through. Right.
Right.
And I'm, yeah.
Well, and see, this goes back to, I think it was last week we were talking about the idea that when I was a kid, I wanted to grow up so fast, right? And
right.
I wanted to, and even like when I was really young, I tended to read books that were way above age level. And I started reading a lot of more like adult level literature at a really early age. And there's a bunch of stuff that is typical for like young adults and teens to read that I like never read, never saw.
Right. Yeah, that's true for me as well. There's, as in my kids are now have hit their tweenage years, I see all these different titles. I'm like, oh yeah, I've heard of all of these.
Yeah.
And I never read any of them.
Right.
So, Robinson Crusoe? I had no idea.
No.
Think he's a big guy in an island full of small people? Is that about right?
No, that's not Robinson Crusoe, is it?
I don't know.
Is he? Is no. It? Wait a minute. I just read that. Wait a minute. I read the book. Okay. Now I'm going to have to dig this in. Because that's the one. Yes, I actually just read last year. No, that's Gulliver's Travels.
That's Gulliver's Travels.
With the Lilliputians. Right. Which I had never read until it was recommended to me by John Comperta, a friend of mine.
Okay.
And it's interesting because there's a lot more there, and most of the adaptations of Gulliver's Travels just focus on the travel to the island of Lilliput. But Gulliver's Travels is actually a satire where he keeps going to all these different places, and each one of them has satirical value and meaning. So,
kind of like a more folky sort of Odyssey or something.
Kind of, yeah.
In a way, it sounds similar. You know, there's all this interaction with it's travels, interaction with these different cultures and how
right.
you relate to that.
But the
Robinson Crusoe is a travel book, by the way.
I thought it was, but I. Yeah,
so I'm not 100% stupid.
That's the title of this week's podcast. Not 100% stupid.
That's fair.
I'm going for that right there. All right.
You know, if I could put that on my gravestone, if I'm able to still live up to that by that point, if I die without disproving that, I would be more than happy to put on my gravestone. I'm not.
Well, listen,
stupid.
you've got a stable 4 or 5% right there that just count on that to endure. You could still go way above that. I'm just saying, like, worst case.
I'm now
going
to guard that jealously. We've already talked about kind of possessiveness. Now it's going to trigger that same sort of. Mm-hmm. Great. I got to be honest with you. After you told me that, and the way you relayed that understanding about me made me feel like this was some sort of known secret that everyone's talked about.
Oh, I don't think so.
And it's made me feel very insecure.
Oh, no, I wouldn't do that. I would say
I kind of wanted to cry here for a little bit because I really it's not something I feel good about. I'm not mad at you at all. I'm not we got to fill space here somehow, right? So I might as well talk about my feelings.
Go for it.
But it was and I think that's more a reflection of my own insecurities as well. You know.
Well, here's
I'm sure you and mom and dad weren't just sitting around at night, you know, after I went to bed. Boy, I mean, what are we going to do about Kevin?
No.
With all these insecurities he has.
That is correct.
These odd tendencies. Right.
No, we would sit up at night and we would contemplate, should we move during the night? And then it was always no. Because dad had just broken his foot.
See, I remember a story related to
that's
that. Remember
deep
dad
cut.
Broke his...
He broke his foot like the night before we were supposed to move. From that
right.
rented house in Des Plaines, to Hanover
right,
Park.
On Walnut Street.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I remember as we were moving out of that house, and we had there was a bunch of stuff that was being thrown out, and so there's a big pile of trash at the curb, and this speaks to a different time. The trash collectors came, and I went down there to... You know, see how they play their game.
Yeah.
See how they make the magic happen, getting rid of all of our junk, you know. And the trash man, one of them came up to me and said, "Hey, I think you got a few beers in the house that we could have?"
Oh, Lord.
So I went back in the house, asked Mom, and she gave me some beers, and I took them out to the trash man.
Nice.
And they consumed some beers while they were loading our trash into the back of their truck.
In the morning?
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, while driving a garbage truck, right.
Good times.
Yeah.
Oh, the 70s were magical.
Right. They were, you know, yeah. City employees.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, right. So that was, yeah, that's, thankfully, that was their equivalent of a two martini lunch. It was, right, it was a two Stroh's breakfast.
Right.
Stroh's.
Oh, pour one out for Stroh's. Well, wait, don't pour one out for Stroh's, because then you'd have one less Stroh's and there are none left. There's... Yeah.
So, yeah, that's...
No, I would... So honestly, to give you a real answer, I think it's something that maybe Mom and I talked about, or like maybe it was kind of an awareness between the two of us. It's not something we talked about, like, routinely. I don't think Dad was ever a part of that at all. No.
You talked about it when I was young?
Yeah. Yeah, like, even, okay. Like an awareness that this was happening, like that you were anxious about this, or that you were concerned about this, or, you know, or maybe it's, and I mean, that's how I remember it, but it's not like, I mean, I'm only 2 years older than you. I was gonna say I was only 2 years older than you. Update, I'm still only 2 years older than you, and I don't think Mom and I didn't have that kind of conversational rhythm. So maybe it's just that I remember observing, like, your interactions with Mom around that. That could be all it is. So, no, I apologize. I don't think it's a thing that, like, was some big open secret or anything like that, or, It sort of triggered in my head. I thought of that when you brought up that idea, because I was like, oh, that feels like a change. Because I think once upon a time, it didn't feel like you enjoyed other kids around, because there was this tension around them and your stuff. So,
yeah, I think for reasons we're not going to get into, that as a child, I sought a controlled, secure environment where I was kind of in charge of what was happening. The parameters of that. There were things that would threaten that.
Mm-hmm. There always are.
But I feel bad about it still. Because I can think back to that, and I just think it's not attractive behavior. It's not behavior that I would want to encourage in somebody. And then I start to feel bad for myself. I'm like, oh man, you poor kid. What was going on?
But we all have to grow from somewhere and out of something. And so, not to be too flippant with that, but it's, yeah, I think you've managed to grow up. So, and the fact that it is not, that experience as a child doesn't impede your enjoying your kids or other kids. See, that's a great thing.
Yeah, I mean, I still want my kids to take care of my things if they're using them,
Do you remember, did I ever tell you about this, when Josh discovered my Calvin and Hobbes books, that at first I was so delighted, because he adored Calvin and Hobbes, like, right away, and I was like, oh, this is great, yes, this is, I am parenting at a high level now, because I'm passing this on to my kid. And then he is reading these so voraciously and carrying them everywhere. Again, Woosley family trait, carry a book with you always and everywhere. Right. You know, carrying them around and using them, reading them, and over and over again. And all of a sudden I realized they're falling apart. And then I was mad. I was like, you little dude. So I'm like, these are my Calvin and Hobbes. And then I was like, oh, wait, we can just go buy more. Okay, that's great. So... we did.
Yeah, I had some Peanuts books from when I was a small child. So, you know, and Martin was reading them, around that same age, you know, 6, 7, 8 years old. And they got, I won't say they got trashed, but, you know, they took some damage.
They got overly loved.
The vernacular, right.
Yeah.
And my initial thought was, yeah, I had that same, like, ah. And I was like, you know what? That's what a book is for. Let's face it. I mean, I have memories of those books. When I see it, I'm like, oh yeah, I remember reading that. But my memories are really more of what I read in the books, and really more, even more than that, the the good feelings it gave me.
Yeah.
And it's not like this is like a Gutenberg Bible or, you know, it's not.
They weren't first editions. Right.
Right. I mean.
Right.
You know what? What will be, will be.
Uh-huh. Indeed. And see, we continue to grow. We continue to learn new things about ourselves and the world around us.
Well, you know what? The world is always teaching us lessons,
no,
right?
All the time.
I mean,
all the time.
That is also something I learned. I don't know at what point in adulthood, but I learned to stop fighting the lessons that the world is trying to teach me.
Yeah.
And there isn't a lot of value to holding anything back because that usually just prolongs the pain. Or makes a pain that is unnecessary. So you
I'm not going to be able to use the word learned in that case. I'm going to have to probably still have that noun end with ing. I'm still in a difficult place with that sometimes. Yeah.
I don't like to present myself as a finished product in most cases. So yeah, I'll agree with you on that.
Other than not being 100% stupid.
Right. Yes.
You're finished at that. You're definitively not going to be 100% stupid. Right. Well, you know, we've been talking for a while. Let's take a break. All right. And we're back. And I hope you came back. You didn't leave immediately to go start your own podcast. But the last thing we want to do today is... we want to talk about something that our kids think that we should know. This is coming from Kevin's kids. My kids, one of them they're both in late teenage years, and so they no longer think that I know anything, I think. So we got to give that a little more time. So they think I should know everything, because duh.
Anything.
Anything.
It would be nice if you knew something.
Anything, Dad. And then, okay. So, but Kevin has got a more positive bit on that. So, Kevin, take that away, please.
Yeah, so at bedtime tonight, after she had come out of her room 2 or 3 times, 12 times, I don't know if she'd ever been in her room. I don't know if there's now space and time even includes her room anymore. She who shall not be named, turned to me and said, "Did you know that when you lick a stamp, it is 1/10 of a calorie?"
1/10 of a calorie.
Yeah. A postage stamp.
Yeah.
And I don't even know if any of them are
Are those still a thing?
No, those are not. They are, actually. I think I saw there's some kind of online version of S&H green stamps, or somebody was trying to revive that, but I don't know if it went anywhere.
So if it's online, if I lick my computer, no caloric value to that.
Wouldn't be the first time.
Not the first time. Not going to be the last. There it goes.
That tippity-tapping you're hearing is me looking up S&H green stamps. Hmm. But so that was, and I had been asking her, because she used to do this more regularly, just drop these non sequitur bombs on me.
Uh-huh.
But so I'd asked her, you know, she had something for me, and she had that ready, and she was like, "There it is."
There you go. I thought you were gonna say you'd been asking her, "Are these stamps making me look fat?"
You know, kids, if you're gonna lick all those stamps, you might want to go outside and get some exercise.
Why there used to be so many fat postal workers.
What?
I don't know.
Come on, lay off the postal workers. This is not a good time for them.
It's not a good time. So many of them have already gone and, you know, gotten upset already. So, all right. So, 1/10 of a calorie. Oh, that's just, so it's another reason to pay your bills online. Is the dietary savings.
Right. Something else I do know from my years working in the
stamp industry?
Mail services industry. Was that
the mail services industry? What is that? Where did you?
I worked for a company that generated mail.
Oh right, my brain went a different place for a minute.
I see where you were going with that now.
That's a little worried. I was like, I don't remember that, and this isn't that type of podcast.
So, the adhesive on envelopes has not been determined to be fit for human consumption.
Well, that's good.
I've seen the big vats of it, these bubbling vats of that adhesive.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something that rolls through it and then applies that onto the envelope when the envelopes are being made. I've seen that process. And I would not want to lick that vat. I would not want to drink anything out of it.
Oh.
I think that's a good rule of thumb. It's one of my favorite game
shows, by the way.
But for a lot of things.
Lick that vat.
But if I think, you know, it, along the lines of knowing where your food comes from, just because you see a thin layer of something shiny on an envelope and you think, well, sure, I can lick that. You should know what something looks like in a larger scale, right?
Yeah.
You should know where it comes from.
Well,
before you decide if it's really something you want to apply your tongue to.
Didn't people put LSD on postage stamps at times? Licking stuff? Now, okay, so follow-up question. If you lick one of the self-adhesive stamps, what's the caloric content of that?
Idea.
Okay. You know, the ones that they make that you don't have to lick. You just peel it off and stick it on. If you choose to lick it.
I don't know that there is, because I don't know that you're really your tongue is taking anything off.
Well, I mean, not if you're not trying hard, it's not.
I'm having a hard time engaging with this question because I just don't understand why it's happening.
Well, that means we've reached the end of our podcast. So I think this is the time where we'll remind people that if you haven't already followed us on Spotify, you can follow us on Spotify, and then it'll let you know when new episodes are coming out. I think you can follow us on Apple Podcasts now.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep, that's where I listened to it this week.
So you can do that. Mm-hmm. If you think this is worth listening to, share it with somebody. Share it with a friend. Share it with somebody who doesn't know us, if you really think it's worth listening to. Because we really think that we need to infect more people with this madness. And so if you have other questions or comments, you can always come to our Facebook page, which is Sons of the Double Cheeseburger. You can weigh in there, or you can just find us on Facebook as well as ourselves.
Yes.
Yes. And then anything else I'm forgetting, Kevin?
No. You're not forgetting anything. You've done a great job. Oh, man, I'm really grateful for how you've done this.
It's you know what? Teamwork, man. Yeah. Teamwork makes the dream work.
Oh, I wish you hadn't said that.
Wanted to end it on a 100% stupid note. We'll be right back.